Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Rodeo here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mat-Su Valley, radiofreepalmer.org, and you can find us all over social media. Just search for Dog Works Radio, and calling in, as always, is our co-host, Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. It's nice and not as ridiculously hot here as it's been. Which makes me very happy, but I hear that you've been getting a little bit of snow up in Alaska.
Yes, in the high mountains, it's already snowing. I know we were out on a river rafting trip this weekend, and we saw a little bit of snow up in the high country. It was beautiful. I hope it's going to turn out to a magnificent mushing season up here in Alaska, and I know all of my mushing friends on Facebook are definitely giddy with these cooler temperatures in the morning.
Absolutely, and I think those of us who are outside Alaska also enjoy the sort of vicarious thrill of seeing the pictures of the snow in places like Denali and other places in Alaska.
Speaking of vicarious thrill, we had a special visitor up here this week. First time ever a sitting president came to above the Arctic Circle. President Obama is in town, and I tell you what, the folks in Alaska are going crazy with his visit up here. He was there in Anchorage on Monday, and then Seward, Dillingham, and Kotzebue over the last couple of days. And he looks like a tourist, doesn't he, Alex, with the selfie stick and the GoPros and all that. He's really enjoying himself up here, isn't he?
He really is. And, you know, it is here in Southern California, we get presidential visits a lot, mostly, I think, to raise money more than anything else. So we are used to the disruption and the additional traffic, and it's interesting for me to watch my friends in Alaska have to deal with the same sort of issues that we have to deal with regularly.
Well, you know, I brought it up because climate change is always on the mind of mushers. Here in the last few years, snow is getting later and less as it goes. And I think that it's a very serious issue. So I'm glad that not only the president, but also the contingent that was up here the other day that was talking about climate change. Hopefully things can be looked upon in a different light, and maybe we can do something to stop this. I don't know. Do you think it's too late or what?
I think we really can do something to stop it, but I think we need to start looking at some serious measures to take now or in the next few years. We can't really push this off for another 10 years without doing anything.
I totally agree, and I tell you what, like riding on the cart with my dogs, but it's nothing compared to a sled. So I don't want to move any further north. I already moved about 3,000 miles north. When we moved up here from Colorado to find snow, I don't think I want to move any further than where I am right now. So hopefully it all works out in the end, and generations to come are able to enjoy this sport that we talk about every couple of weeks here on Mushing Radio.
Absolutely. And last show, we talked about the Iditarods of the 70s. And before we get into the Iditarods of the 80s, the one thing that I had meant to mention back then, but did not, was the belt buckle, which I know you and I have talked about a lot on the show. The belt buckle was designed in 1974, and the first year that they gave them out was in 1975. So we have had 40 years of the belt buckles being awarded for the Iditarod.
And remember, folks that are listening, and I'm sure you know it if you've heard our show before, you only get one belt buckle. It's not something you get over and over and over again. That is a highly coveted, highly treasured item and or trophy, I guess you could call it that. You know, you see people all the time, Iditarod finishers, wearing that belt buckle. I see Lance Mackey doing it. Hugh Neff wears his a lot. all of the big time mushers still wear that belt buckle, even if it's 30 or 40 years old.
Which is really one of the fantastic things about Iditarod. So let's dive into the 1980s, because we have a lot of stuff to cover and a short amount of time to do it in. The one thing to sort of generalize the entire decade, I think this was the time that we really saw the rise of female mushers. We'd had female mushers before, but this was, in the 1980s, was the first time we had female mushers win the Iditarod, and in fact, they won it 4 years in a row, 1985 through 1988.
Right. And it's been a long time since we've had another woman win, and I think it's coming on pretty quick. And before we get into it, you and I have talked a lot about on the show about Ali Zirkle, who's a perennial contender coming in second the last several years. She's been very close to winning this thing. So I don't know. Do you think she's the next Kristen Butcher?
I would love to see Ali Zirkle win. I think she is a fantastic musher and would be an amazing champion and ambassador for the sport. So I'd love to see that. I think if she isn't able to do it in the next couple of years, we might see one of the younger female mushers just really come out of nowhere and take it all in 3 or 4 years.
So 1980, who won that year, and do you have a story about that person?
Yeah, so 1980, the winner was Joe May, and with lead dogs Wilbur and Cora Gray. And 1980 was, Joe May is not someone who has run a lot of Iditarods. This is sort of the tail end of the era where, the old timers era. And in fact, in the 1980 race, we had Herbie Nyakpuk, the Shishmaref Cannonball, came in second, was about a half a day behind Joe. So we had a lot of people like that. We also, in the top 10, had Rick Swenson, who would win the race 5 times, Susan Butcher, whom we'll talk about in a while, Emma Peters, and the rookie of the year in 10th position was Donna Gentry, obviously a female musher. But in addition to all of that, 1980 marked the debut of two mushers who would go on to be extremely important and influential in the sport. It was the rookie year for Martin Boozer and Didi Genro. So anyone who is familiar with the Iditarod or the history of the Iditarod or even has listened to this show a lot, we have talked on many occasions about both Martin and Didi. Martin came in 22nd in about 17 days, and Didi was 24th in 17 days, 7 hours. So two very, very important mushers for the Iditarod, and also two very important leaders in terms of dog care.
Right. So 1981, who do we have?
So 1981 was kind of an interesting year because we have Rick Swenson again winning. This also is the first year that this year saw the prize for the first place double. It had been $12,000 and it went up to $24,000 in 1981. We also started seeing some of the more old-time or old-fashioned style of racers were falling further and further back, and a lot of them stopped running at various times in the 80s. So Rick Swenson finished in 12 days, 8 hours, and 45 minutes, which was a fairly significant. We talked about the first race where where the winters were, I believe, 18 or 19 days. So to be down this far just by 1981 was kind of amazing. Rick's lead dogs in 81 were Andy and Slick, and Andy was Rick's leader, was one of Rick's leaders in 1977, the first time he won the race as well. So we're seeing the Rick Swenson sort of dynasty right in this era.
And you know, at Iditarod headquarters here in Wasilla, they have Andy stuffed. The lead dog's body is stuffed there at Iditarod headquarters. So if you ever get a chance to visit, he is there. It's always interesting to find that type of historical artifact. I remember just walking to the Iditarod headquarters, and there's Andy, kind of in the back corner there of the Iditarod headquarters, but there he is in all of his glory.
Yeah, and it's really, people who have never actually seen the Iditarod live are sometimes surprised by how small the dogs are. And I know before I had seen a dog team in person, I was under the impression that these dogs would be, you know, 60, 70, 80-pound dogs because they have to do so much work. But they're actually a lot smaller. And seeing Andy stuffed in the Iditarod headquarters is really a very interesting thing, because you get a perspective on how much power can come from such a small animal.
Right. So 1982, who do we have?
Okay, so 82 again is Rick Swenson, and this is the first time that anyone had won the race back-to-back, with Andy again in lead. The 81 race was a little over 12 days. The 82 race was 16 days, 4 hours, and 40 minutes, which is because there was a storm that delayed the race considerably. What we've seen going through year to year is generally the trend is that the race gets shorter and the winter. It takes a shorter and shorter amount of time, unless there is a significant weather event. And because it's Alaska, significant weather events do happen frequently. The 82 race, though, is interesting because Susan Butcher, who would later win the race four times, came in second and was less than 4 minutes behind Rick. So with a little bit of... with a little bit of extra something from her team or a little bit more of a problem with Rick's team, we easily could have had Susan Butcher win the 82 race.
Who else was in that race of note, if you know, Alex?
Emmett Peters was there. Dave Monson, all in the top 10. Bob Klupach came in seventh. And then at 11, we had Rick Mackey, who would win the race, Dean Osmer, who would win the race in later years. Joe May was 15th. Joe Reddington Sr. came in 17th in about 17 and a half days. So we had in this race about 55 mushers. So it was a good field. It wasn't the largest that it had been, but certainly a very, very good field.
1983.
So 1983 was when Rick Mackey, who was the son of Dick Mackey, who won that photo finish race in 1978, and also the brother of Lance Mackey, won by a little over an hour, almost 2 hours, over Eep Anderson. And this was the race that, I believe it was, I should have checked this beforehand because I don't want to get the details wrong, but it was Rick's sixth time race, and it had been his father's sixth time running the race, and he was running with the same bib number. And then when Lance Mackey won his first Iditarod, it was also his sixth race and also running it with the same bib number.
I believe the bib number was number 13. I don't want to get my facts wrong either, but that sticks out into my head that all of them had number 13, which I found as, you know, the taboo number, but it played out very well for the Mackey clan.
Yes, I believe that's correct. I was going to say that, but I didn't want to get it wrong either. So if we're both thinking it was 13, it probably was.
So 1984. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. What else was happening in 83?
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, so 1984 was Dean Osmar won with Red and Bullet in lead. 83, because the weather was better than 82, we were down again to about 12 and a half days. 84 was just a little bit longer than that, 12 days, 15 hours, and 7 minutes. And 84, in 84, Susan Butcher was once again second place. So this is someone who was really knocking on the door to win the Iditarod. It wasn't quite as close. She was about 2 hours behind Dean.
Are you still there, Alex?
Yeah, sorry, I'm still here.
Okay.
So in 1985, which was the 1985 was a very pivotal year for the Iditarod. We had Susan Butcher, who had finished second twice, was leading the race for a great deal of it, and it was widely expected that she was going to win. And then very late in the race, her team was attacked by a moose, and her dogs were killed, and another 13 of her dogs were injured, so she had to scratch. Also, very, very late in the race, there was a gigantic storm, and almost nobody was moving, and the entire race was basically shut down. And then Libby Riddles went out in the storm and was the first one to go out in the storm, and she made it through and went on to win the race. But we'd been at about 12 and a half days, 82, 83, 84, and the 85 finishing time was 18 days, 20 minutes, and 17 seconds. So a considerably longer amount of time. And, you know, certainly Libby Riddles is a great champion, but I think there are a lot of longtime Iditarod fans who really were hoping that the first woman who would win the Iditarod would be Susan Butcher.
And she is the first woman ever to win Iditarod, Riddles. I know we've talked about this for, I guess, we're about 11 years now in the race. It took that long for a woman to finally step up and win. I know we had talked about being in second place. But for the first time in history, we have a woman winning the race. And I know it's at the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of what it is. But there's a bumper or a T-shirt or something that says something about
women
winning the Iditarod. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's very popular in Alaska at this time. It said, Alaska, where men and women win the Iditarod.
That's it right there. So now here we are. That was 85 there, Alex. We had 86 here.
Right. So in 85, also, we saw the prize money jump again. So Libby Riddles took home $50,000 for winning the Iditarod, which is more than double what it had been the year before when it was $24,000. In 1986, that is when Susan Butcher finally won, and she won with lead dogs Granite and Maddie in 11 days, 15 hours and 6 minutes. And this is the first time that the race had ever been done in under 12 days.
And you know, Alex, Granite is still a very coveted bloodline. That Susan Butcher Trailbreaker bloodline is still very much out there. I was just talking to a guy this morning, a friend of mine, and he has a dog from Trailbreaker Kennels who goes way back to the Granite bloodline. So I think that's a very important dog in the Susan Butcher Kennel.
Absolutely. And people still talk in sort of reverent tones about the Susan Butcher dogs and her bloodlines. Granite, interestingly enough, was the runt of the litter and almost was given away to be a house dog. And then Susan Butcher decided that she really liked Granite and kept him around, and then started taking him out on runs. And then after a while, he showed that he really had what it took to be a leader. He was her leader in 86 and 87, both times that she won. And then in, I believe, the fall of 1987, Granite, they were out doing a training run, and Granite collapsed and had heat stroke. And Susan took him to the doctor, and the doctor said that he had severe kidney damage and lung damage and possibly brain damage. And she basically stayed with him at his side for 2 weeks and was convinced that this was it as far as his racing career, and that he would, you know, have a well-earned retirement. And she started then letting him come along for some very, very short runs because she didn't want to overtax him. And then she took him on a 250-mile race, and he was doing so well that she put him on lead for the very end of the race. And Rick Swenson passed her, and this did not sit well with Granite, who suddenly all of his competitive instincts kicked back into gear, and he started pulling so hard and so fast that the other dogs had to struggle to keep up. And she actually stopped the sled and put the hook in and tried to put him in the basket so that he wouldn't exhaust himself. But he just was adamant that he had to be out there and lead. And she put him back in lead and went on to pass Rick Swenson and win that race. And as a result of doing that 250-mile race with the permission of her vet, she again ran him in lead for the 87 race and won that Iditarod as well.
And I think the Susan Butcher story is such an amazing story, and I'd love to do a couple of shows on her in the future, because she's not a girly girl by any stretch of the imagination, is she, Alex?
No, absolutely not. And I think that is why, to this day, a lot of Alaskan women I know will point to her as being such an amazing role model, because she is someone who was out there competing against the men and not asking for any special consideration or not asking for any sort of advantage, but just willing to take on this male-dominated sport, you know, exactly the same way that the men do it.
So in 1987, Susan Butcher won again. Anything else on 87, or do you want to go to 88?
Let's go to 88. In 87, it was Susan with Granite and Maddie in lead, and in 88, Susan Butcher won with Granite and Tolstoy in lead. So by 1988, there was a problem with some of the sponsorship, so the perk money went down. So the winner in 88, it was down to $30,000 from $50,000, which, you know, is a pretty significant amount. In 1988, the top five finishers were Susan Butcher, Rick Swenson, Martin Boozer, Joe Garney, and Joe Reddington Sr. So that's a pretty great top five, and
right.
Some really, really amazing and famous names. I just wanted to mention very briefly, I was under the impression that Martin Boozer had been the first person from outside the U.S. and Canada who competed in the Iditarod, but it turns out that that's not true. There was someone named Stein Fjestad from Norway who competed in 1977 and then never again.
Interesting. Martin, he is from Switzerland, is that right? And he's been here pretty much ever since the early 80s, if I'm correct, and he's become a real ambassador to the state of Alaska.
Absolutely, and I know we've mentioned this before, but Martin very famously and publicly decided that after living here for living in the U.S. for over 20 years, that following the September 11th attacks in 2001, decided that he wanted to become a U.S. citizen. So he passed his citizenship test and was sworn in as a U.S. citizen under the Broad Arch after when he finished the 2002 Iditarod.
Very cool. I did not know that story. So we have just a few more minutes, Alex. I know we're down to our last year here, 1989. What's happening then at the end of the decade?
So at the end of the decade, we have Joe Runyon, who won that race with Rambo and Ferlin the Husky in lead. That was another race where there were a lot of very, very famous names at the front. So we had Joe Runyon was in first, 11 days, 5 hours, 24 minutes. Susan Butcher was in second, about an hour behind him. And then Rick Swenson, Didi Genreau, LeVon Barve, Martin Boozer, Rick Mackey, Joe Reddington Sr., and Tim Osmar. So, again, very, very well-known names finishing way at the top in 1989. Also, while the purse had been down to $30,000 in 1988, by 1989 it was back up again to $50,000.
You know, Didi Genreau has never won the race, but she has a heck of a lot of top 10 finishes. Do you happen to know how many?
Yeah, I believe she has 16 top 10 finishes.
Wow.
Yeah, 16 top 10s, and I believe she has been second at least twice. Yeah, she was second in 98 and in 93.
And for folks that don't know,
you know
about...
Didi Genreau...
Oh, go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say... very quickly, for folks that don't know, Didi was one of the folks up here in Willow that in the Sky Fire, and it happened shortly before the annual picnic where folks sign up for Iditarod Saturdays before, and she was there that weekend, and the tenacity of getting there and all that she went through, she signed up for the race, and with no bones about it, says, I'm coming back and I'm going to run again. No matter what it takes, we're going to run here at this hill and get back in the swing of things, even though we lost our home.
Right. And Didi Genreau, like Martin Boozer, is one of these mushers who is always one of the more interesting and one of the top finishers, even if they are not directly in contention to win. They are always mushers who are worth watching. And they have both been very, very active in the musher community in terms of making sure that people who run the Iditarod are very well educated about the race itself and about dog care. And between the two of them, they've really been at the forefront of making sure that the dogs are very, very well cared for, and that anyone who is running the Iditarod is aware of what is required and what might happen so that they can do everything humanly possible to safeguard the dogs.
So So on our next episode is going to be the 1990s decade of the Iditarod. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, the 80s was really the year of the woman, the decade of the women mushers. Do we have kind of a theme for the 90s, Alex, that you're aware of or you want to mention before we go?
I'm not sure. The 90s are sort of a lost period for me. I have a very clear memory of the 80s, and after the 90s are a little fuzzy.
They are fuzzy, but we will hear Martin Bucer's name quite a bit in the 90s. We'll start talking about Jeff King in the 90s. I know that that some of the old-timers that you had mentioned, they begin to retire from, but occasionally those guys sprout up in the weeds, so to speak, and do very well in the third decade of the Iditarod. So I'm looking forward to it. We're going to talk about 1990s of Iditarod coming up in a few weeks. Alex, anything else in closing?
Just wanted to say again that it was a really, really exciting time in the 80s and really amazing that so many female mushers did so well. And as you said, it's been a long time since we've had a female win the Iditarod. And I know that I personally, and I think a lot of other fans, would just love to see another woman win, whether it's Allie Zirkle or someone else.
Looking forward to it. So we will talk in 2 weeks from today. We'll definitely an upcoming show in the meantime. Alex, it's always been a pleasure. Hope you enjoy the rest of the summer of what's left of it down your way, Will, up here as well.
Excellent. Thanks, Robert.